You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Next up and for our final piece, local elections are coming up and the race is getting interesting, from domain buying to debates. But what are the rules of a campaign? How does a council operate, and how do we ensure that the views of a community are translated appropriately into our policy? I spoke with Dr. Mike Reid, a Principal Policy Advisor at Local Government New Zealand, about all of this and more. And I started by asking why Auckland's local elections use a simple majority or first-past-the-post system when central government uses MMP.
There are probably quite a few entities that would like to change about New Zealand, because what we've seen internationally, as well as in New Zealand itself, is we've been seeing a shift away from these first-past-the-post, winner-takes-all models into more proportional types of representation and voting. For obvious reasons, because the proportional systems deliver better reflect the diversity of communities. So we're seeing internationally this gradual trend towards more proportional systems of voting, and I think we're getting a lot of benefits of that, especially in Parliament. Now, in terms of local government began life, as did Parliament, with a first-past-the-post system. But in fact, in 2001, Parliament changed the local elections so that councils can choose to have first-past-the-post, or they can choose to have a proportional system of voting. And the choice that we've got is single transferable vote system, which actually many people actually thought that Parliament should have had, rather than mixed member proportional, but that's by the by. Now, who's responsible for changing that? The answer to that is twofold. One, a council can resolve to do that. So the council can just make a straight resolution, as long as it's 2 years before the elections, roughly, or the community can force it by a petition and a vote.
Auckland has a postal system, and there are a lot of critiques of that. For example, it might make people who move around a lot more disadvantaged for voting.
Sure. Yes.
So is there any discussion about whether we can change the system to be more inclusive of those demographics?
Well, there were actually a lot of discussion. The issue really is putting that discussion into practice, and to change the practice largely requires action by Parliament, or at least regulatory change in Wellington. Since 1989, all councils have used postal voting. What we've seen is that gradually turnout has tended to decline. And as you say, there are a number of factors to that. And one of the big problems we have at the moment is, of course, fewer people actually write letters, and there are not so many post boxes around. And it's always been a problem for people who aren't living in a residential address for consistently. People, students, people are shifting flats regularly. The options that we were really keen, LGNZ was really keen on, was to look at online voting, which is, as you know, been adopted by some countries, but also by local government systems in Canada and elsewhere. And we've really been pushing the government in the last two elections.
And to turn from the general system more to the rules of a campaign, so to speak, what are the rules for when a campaign can put up advertisements like billboards or posters in public spaces?
Good question. So in terms of private spaces, they could put up an advert whenever they like. So if I wanted to put an advert on my front lawn 2 years before an election saying vote for me in 2 years' time, I can do that, as long as it's not going to cause a problem in terms of distraction to traffic or neighbours might get pissed off. But in terms of public places, it's actually controlled by two things, and usually controlled by a council bylaw. So it will vary from city to city, and sometimes it's by bylaws. So there's no consistent message there.
Local Government New Zealand has worked with the Human Rights Commission on the inclusive campaign guidelines. So when were those completed and published, and what were the motivations for creating that framework?
Well, initially, they were kind of announced, as far as they republicized their conference last week. So the inclusive guidelines are for people who are candidates and are standing. So really, we're right in the beginning of that process. Now, that they're motivated by, one of the things, a real concern for us, and we've done some surveying, one of my colleagues at Local Government New Zealand surveying very recently, and we found out that a very high percentage of members actually are struggling with bullying and harassment as elected members from other elected members in councils. And we need to make councils safe for people if we want people to stand, particularly if we want people from diverse communities to stand. And that starts with the campaign. We want to see campaigns in which people are not running each other down personally, and to stay within the kind of guidelines that really the Human Rights Commission promote in terms of respecting diversity and difference. And we think that if we could actually get the candidates to kind of buy into those guidelines, that will spill over into their behaviour once they're elected. Because the most important thing for us, if we're going to have a strong local democracy, then we need to encourage people from all walks of life, people of all different backgrounds, to actually put their hands up for public service in a local government. And we need to make that space both rewarding and safe.
There has been controversy around online campaigning recently. recently, with domain names being bought and utilised for competition, but are there entrenched rules about online campaigning, or are those regulations lacking a little bit, which is why there might not be a clear image of what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do online?
Yeah, in terms of social media and in terms of online regulations, that local elections fit into the same kind of world as every other piece of online interaction, and that it's very, very hard to actually set rules and manage. Yeah, so we are highly sympathetic, of course, but it's a very difficult area to regulate. And the issue is, you don't know what the issues are going to be in the future that you need to regulate for. So interestingly, in terms of domain name controversy that's going on in Auckland, so that issue has never arisen before. So no one would have necessarily thought that you should be regulating it. And practically, how would you, even if you intended to do so? So the reality is, this is still an emerging space that we're trying to get to grips with.
To move away from the kind of campaign and more to participation in local democracy,
yes,
Aotearoa has quite a low voting turnout in local elections. Are there any real known reasons for this? Are there specific demographics that don't tend to vote?
We understand it really well. The older you are, the more likely you are to vote. And actually, when you look at the demographics, it's almost a straight line. So the younger you are, the less likely you are to vote. And the older, by the time you get to 90, almost 100% of you vote. And so the question is, why is that? Some of that, and most of the biggest reason, is the sense of relevance. So people, one of the reasons they don't vote for local is they don't think it's important. And a critical factor in whether you vote or not is whether you've stayed in the same house for more than 3 years. And this is about putting down roots. So if you put down roots in a community, you're immediately thinking about the state of the streets, the state of the footpath, who's been cleaning, whether it's been actually where the council's come around and cleaned up the rubbish recently. When you've lived in a community for a reasonable period of time, you've got much greater connections to it, and you're much more aware of actually the services that the local authority provides for your well-being.
So further than voting, when a council has actually decided, how can we avoid instances like Protect Putaki, for example, where everything was technically by council books, but the actions of the council were not congruent with what the community wanted? What mechanisms can reduce barriers to participation then, I suppose? And how can we ensure that the views of the communities are translated to actual policy?
This is a really good question, and unfortunately, we spend a lot of time thinking about this question. Ultimately, councils are bound by law to take into account the views of residents and citizens when they're making decisions about matters. So the first question is that you need to have, communities need to take a close interest in how their council works. So I get a lot of queries from people who are unhappy with a council decision about this or that. And one of my first questions to them is, have you raised this with your ward councillor? Because your ward councillor is the person, in a sense, you've voted in to look after your interests around the council table. So it's a... The standard tools, obviously, is to make sure when elections come along that you vote for people who've got the sort of same views about your community as you've got. And if you haven't voted and you haven't thought about who you're voting for, it's hard to complain that the people who are actually running the council may not be doing what you want. But the second thing is that councils do have to go through formal consultation on a regular basis. And so the second question you would ask, did you make a meaningful submission on the council's annual plan? Are you going to council meetings? So there are mechanisms there, but you can't be passive. And one of our big challenges, of course, in public policy world, is what can we do to really promote what we call active citizenship, to make people feel that they can actively be involved in their decision-making. In some parts of New Zealand, one of the things that we recommend is perhaps they approach the council to establish a community board, or if the council's not listed, get the support of their neighbours and residents and go straight to the local government commission. So there are a range of things to do, but this is one of the issues for your information, that the Future for Local Government panel, which is currently thinking about the future of local government, is putting a lot of thought into. One of the big questions in front of them is, how do we actually improve participation of citizens in local government, and how can we make the councils much more responsive?
That was me speaking with Dr. Mike Reid from Local Government New Zealand about local elections. And if during the course of that interview you realise you haven't received your voting papers, which you should have received by now, you can go to vote.nz and update all of your details to be set for Auckland's local election this October.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.